Welcome to Project Wellness and welcome to my podcast today. My name's Dominique Liv-Kamal. I'm an Australian naturopath, nutritionist and medical herbalist. I'm based on the Sunshine Coast, which is about 1 hour north of Brisbane, and we're in Queensland, which is super sunny and beautiful. Project Wellness is my podcast to share information with you about wellness and joy. What I'm doing today is I'm sitting in my medical library in our herbal dispensary. I've got a couple of books with me and I'll share with you what they are as we go through them. And I just want to explain to you information today about cholesterol. What is cholesterol? How is cholesterol produced in our body? What's the breakdown of cholesterol? I'm going to give you the lowdown on cholesterol. And then I want to tell you about some herbal and natural and lifestyle and dietary solutions to help you with your cholesterol levels. The reason why I'm doing cholesterol as my podcast today is that we're in detox season at the moment and cleansing. And one of the things that we want to cleanse out of our body is if we've got too many fatty acids, lipids, they can accumulate in our body, they can be produced and we can put on weight, or they can be in our bloodstream and they can create precursors for cardiovascular disease like arteriosclerosis, which I'll explain to you, as well as pulmonary diseases. And we don't want that. You know, what we want to do as we age is we want to have optimal wellness, and keeping our cholesterol in good condition and having the right levels of cholesterol in our blood and producing appropriate cholesterol and making sure we've got it there when we need it is super important. So the first question we're going to ask today is, what is cholesterol? You know, it's got a pretty rotten reputation. Like everyone, we all know about it promotes heart disease. We know that if you've got too much cholesterol in the bloodstream, it's a key contributor to arteriosclerosis, and it can clog and create plaque in our arteries, which can block, and they set the stage for your heart attack. So the role of cholesterol in your body is not all negative. In fact, it's an essential. It's an essential nutrient. To fully explain cholesterol, you need to realize that it's vital to your health and well-being. And we measure cholesterol production in the blood. So if you go to your GP and if you get a blood test of your cholesterol levels, they usually take it at fasting. And when I say that, that usually means that they'll say, don't eat anything for 12 hours before you come and have the blood test. And the reason why they do that is because this is showing what they consider a realistic, true level of what your blood cholesterol will be like without the influences of any foods that you may have eaten in your diet. Cholesterol is found in every cell in our body, and it is a waxy, white, yellowy fat, and it's a crucial building block for all cell walls and all cell membranes. Cholesterol, it's needed to make vitamin D, testosterone, estrogen. It carries around a lot of hormones and helps make a lot of hormones. It's fat-dissolving bile acids, so you wouldn't be able to make bile without having first made cholesterol. Cholesterol production is so important that your liver makes and your intestines make about 80%. And the other 20% only comes from your food. So with all the hype and talk about cholesterol and your diet being the problem, it's not always the problem. It can sometimes be something that's in your liver and you're manufacturing too much cholesterol. And that's another reason why you want to keep your liver in optimal health and do a really nice little liver detox to help reduce undesirable amounts of cholesterol that may be in your body, and fatty acids and lipoproteins. If you ate 200 or 300 milligrams of cholesterol a day, and so if you think about it, one egg, the yolk of the egg, has about 200 milligrams, your liver would still produce an additional 600 to 900 milligrams per day from the raw materials that you've eaten, such as fats, carbohydrates and proteins. Cholesterol is a fat and it can't travel alone in the bloodstream. So it would just end up like as little tiny balls, like little globules, fats running around in like a glass of water if it was just left in your blood. And so the body has to package your cholesterol with other lipids and protein-covered particles that mix easily with the blood, so they have to emulsify in with the blood. And this is what are lipoproteins. It's a lipid plus a protein, which is a fatty acid plus a protein. And they help move cholesterol and other fats throughout the body. So cholesterol and other lipids circulate in the bloodstream in several different forms. So there's the one that gets the most attention. It's known as a low-density lipoprotein, and people call that a bad lipoprotein. But lipoproteins come in all kinds of shapes and sizes, and each type has its own task, and they can morph from one form into another. So when we talk about lipoproteins, we've got these things called cyclomicrons, and they're in the small intestine, and they're very large particles, and their job is to carry triglycerides, fatty acids, from the dietary intake that you've had into the liver, where they're metabolized. Then there's very low density lipoproteins, and they also carry triglycerides to tissues, but they are made by the liver. As the body cells extract fatty acids from the very low density lipoproteins, the particles turn into intermediate density lipoproteins, and with further extraction into low density lipoproteins. And then there's intermediate density lipoproteins, and they're the particles from the very low density lipoproteins. And they're removed rapidly by the liver, and some are changed into low-density lipoproteins. So the very low-density lipoproteins break down. And then the next stage is the low-density lipoproteins. They're really high into your cholesterol. And since most of the triglycerides that were in the low-density lipoproteins are already gone, the low-density lipoprotein is known as bad cholesterol, because it delivers cholesterol to tissues and is strongly associated with the buildup of artery clogging plaque, which is arteriosclerosis. And then we have high-density lipoproteins, and they're called good cholesterol because they remove the cholesterol from circulation and from the artery walls and return it to the liver for excretion. The reason why low-density lipoproteins are thought to be bad cholesterol is because they contain 60 to 70% total blood cholesterol. And the quantity and density of systemic low-density lipoprotein particles correlates with the risk of arteriosclerosis. And elevated low-density lipoprotein levels suggest that an individual has a greater potential for developing arteriosclerosis. High-density lipoproteins are the smallest and most dense lipoproteins. Their function is to transfer cholesterol from peripheral cells to the liver either directly or after transferring to low-density lipoproteins and very low-density lipoproteins, particularly in the liver, and the level of hepatic low-density lipoproteins receptors generally controls the level of circulating low-density lipoprotein. High levels of high-density lipoprotein are considered beneficial, and they counteract the effects of the low-density lipoproteins. And the high-density lipoproteins prevents the accumulation of cholesterol in the arterial walls, providing protection against the development of arteriosclerosis. So what is arteriosclerosis? Arteriosclerosis is something that can happen when we're quite young. It's something that happens in everybody. And it seems as though cholesterol deposits and low-density lipoproteins tend to find their way behind the arterial walls. So there's the wall of the vein and the wall of the artery, and the low density lipoproteins, they accumulate behind there, and then they turn into what's called a macrophage. And a macrophage is generally a cell that eats poisons and toxins and then carries it out of our body harmlessly. But in the case of a low density lipoprotein, it loses its macrophage ability and it becomes stagnant and it forms a thing called a foam cell. Now, a foam cell will sit behind the artery wall full of low density lipoproteins and cholesterol for years. And then you take a trauma, for example. The trauma might be your arteries are stiff and hard. The trauma might be an accident. The trauma might be any kind of thing that would cause the arterial wall to burst open. And that can even be an overaccumulation of the little tiny foam cells behind the wall. And then what they do is they break out into the artery and they just block the artery. So they stop the flow of blood coming through. And this is what can cause a heart attack. We all have foam cells behind our arterial walls. Many of us will go through life with this not being a problem. However, for others, it can be a problem. It's also associated with other illnesses. And the illnesses that it's associated with are many cardiovascular type of illnesses. For example, if you have foam cells, you could, in your neck, in the veins and arteries in your neck, it could cause a stroke. If you have foam cells near your heart, it could cause a heart attack. If you have a diet that is high in fatty acids, that is going to give your body more opportunity to collect foam cells behind the arteries. It's going to give your body more opportunity to have more cholesterol and low-density lipoproteins running around in your body, which is something that we want to prevent the blood serum levels of low-density lipoproteins so that we're able to work as well as we can to prevent having any kind of heart attack or arteriosclerosis breakouts. The association between elevated serum cholesterol and coronary heart disease was first reported in the 1930s, and subsequent large epidemiological studies have confirmed a strong relationship between serum cholesterol and coronary heart disease. Current predictions estimate that by next year, 2020, cardiovascular diseases, notably arteriosclerosis, will become the leading global cause of total disease burden. Lipoprotein disorders or dyslipidemias are common and are an important risk factor for coronary artery disease and all types of arteriosclerotic vascular disease. Now, I'm getting this from Clinical Naturopathy, an evidence-based guide to practice by the beautiful Jerome Saras and John Wardle. And I'm just reading you just some information out of their book now. The information that I previously gave you was my own information and information from my book, The Wellness Zone. So now I'm just giving you some information that Jerome and John have shared with us, and it's really information worth knowing. Cardiovascular risk was found to be positively associated with low-density lipoprotein C levels and inadvertently with high-density lipoprotein levels. Because remember that the high-density lipoproteins take the cholesterol back to the liver for synthesis and for it to be processed and taken out of the body harmlessly. The relationship between fasting serum triglycerides and cardiovascular risk has been confounded by the inverse association between TG, which is fasting serum triglycerides, and HDL, high density lipoprotein, as well as the association of triglycerides with other risk factors such as diabetes mellitus and body mass. So this is your body weight, your body mass index, whether you're in a good body weight, whether you're overweight, or whether you're obese, contribute to this as well. Triglycerides alone are now considered an important independent predictor of cardiovascular risk. Arteriosclerosis affects various regions of the circulation and will present with unique clinical symptoms depending on the particular vascular bed affected. In coronary arteries, it causes myocardial infarction and angina, whereas stroke and transient cerebral ischemia can occur when it's present in the arteries of the nervous system. In the peripheral circulation, it can result in intermittent claudication and gangrene, which can jeopardize limb viability. Now, this is something that's found in diabetes type 2 patients. Atherogenesis and pathogenesis of arteriosclerosis usually occurs over decades in a discontinuous fashion, with relative periods of quiescence punctured with periods of rapid evolution. The eventual clinical manifestation may be chronic, as is the case in angina, or acute, such as a heart attack or stroke or sudden death. Regardless, individuals may live with arteriosclerosis and experience no symptoms or reduce life expectancy or morbidity. And that's what I was talking about a moment ago when I explained to you how arteriosclerosis is formed. Because it's something that is just formed in our bodies over our lifetime. And that is why it's really important when we're doing detoxes and cleanses to be able to bring down our cholesterol levels. And it's important to bring them down and keep them in range for everybody. But this is a really nice time to do it. When you're doing detoxes, when you're cleansing, it's a really, you know, important time to get rid of all the congestion in your liver, get your blood nice and clean, and get your fatty acid levels in good balance. The fatty streak represents the initial lesion, usually due to focal increase in the density of lipoproteins within the region of the intima of the blood vessel. Hence, the reason for vigilance in maintaining low levels of these particles in the bloodstream. So the lower levels of total cholesterol you've got traveling around in your blood at any point in time, which means the less LDL cells you have, the more chance you have of being healthy and not developing arteriosclerosis. And the higher levels that you have give you more opportunity to have arteriosclerosis. And so, you know, they go here to talk about C-reactive protein and homocysteine and oxidative stress, preventing it. They suggest risk factors applicable to related to lifestyle choices and genetics. Jerome Saras and John Wardle are saying in their book that overall estimates of the hereditary of myocardial infarction, one of the major clinical outcomes of arteriosclerosis, have varied widely, ranging from very little to greater than 50%. It's important to note that hereditary varies from population to population. In populations in which the environment is relatively homogeneous, for example in Iceland, genetics will tend to predominate, whereas in populations exhibiting large environmental differences, for example Los Angeles, genetics are relatively less important. The known risk factors for arteriosclerosis generally exhibit very significant hereditary estimates. Smoking and alcohol consumption, as well as a diet rich in refined sugars and saturated fats, will adversely influence the condition. Hypertension, diabetes, and obesity have a pronounced negative influence on the disease. Exercise is also a significant factor. In women, the protective effects of estrogen are greatly diminished in menopause. So that suggests that estrogen protects you from arteriosclerosis. There are several medical conditions that drastically increase the risk associated with this condition, and all of these may cause altered blood fat profiles as secondary to their primary condition. The influence of environmental factors on lipoprotein metabolism and cardiovascular disease have been dramatically revealed by comparisons of different populations. Studies have shown that intrauterine undernutrition is associated with obesity and other detrimental metabolic characteristics in adulthood. In particular, undernutrition was associated with premature onset of neonatal leptin surge, which appears to be involved in the formation of the energy regulation circuits in the hypothalamus that affect the metabolism in adults, which is part of the oxidative stress story with arteriosclerosis. So nitric oxide plays an important role in the regulation of vascular tone and the suppression of smooth muscle cell proliferation. An increase in oxidative stress inactivates nitric oxide, impairing endothelium-dependent vasodilation and creating endothelium dysfunction. And that's an effect with oxidative stress has on arteriosclerosis. So the increase of blood homocysteine concentrations as a result of dietary, genetic, metabolic or hormonal or toxic factors, a dietary deficiency of vitamin B6 and folic acid, and an absorption deficiency of vitamin B12, which result from traditional food processing and abnormal absorption of B group vitamins, cause elevations in blood homocysteine. But they believe that the homocysteination of lipoproteins increases their atherogenicity and hence their cytotoxic effects on endothelial tissue. And it's hypothesized that oxidative stress and methylative modification is the method by which homocysteine is pro-arteriosclerotic. I know that sounds really technical, but it's important to sort of try and understand the technical levels. Jerome Saracen and John Wardle are saying here in their book, the naturopathic treatment aims are to alter lipid profile via diet, to modify the lifestyle, to exercise, reduce excess homocysteine levels and reduce levels of C-reactive protein in their diet. And they talk about taking vitamin B3. They're talking about taking fiber. And these are all important things that we want to do in our diets. And then here they're just doing one little test here on turmeric, which was done on an indigenous a Thai, Curcuma commosa, which is an indigenous plant of Thailand, a type of turmeric, has been traditionally and widely used as an anti-inflammatory agent for the treatment of postpartum uterine bleeding and uterine inflammation. They added it to people, they gave it in a clinical trial to some hamsters, and it resulted in a decrease of plasma triglyceride and cholesterol levels. There's been a lot of research into turmeric with animals, but the tests and humans has really been more qualitative than quantitative. And I know that in our herbal dispensary, when we give our patients our beautiful cholesterol blend, which we put turmeric, ginger, globe artichoke and garlic in our blend, And we find that that works really, really well in reducing low-density lipoproteins and reducing total blood cholesterol levels. So they've got review of major evidence here of dietary and lifestyle modifications. And they're saying that dietary treatment should be the first line of treatment. So they basically would suggest that low saturated fats diets with low levels of low density lipoproteins. They're saying to take 45 grams of oats daily as part of a diet for 6 weeks, and they had significant reductions in both total cholesterol. And a trial in 2008 compared a low-fat diet with a very low-carbohydrate diet, and each diet provided around 1,500 calories a day with around 20 to 30 grams of protein. The diets differed in the amount of carbohydrate, being 12% for the low-carbohydrate diet and 56% for the low-fat diet. The low-carbohydrate diet was higher in fats, particularly omega-6 fatty acids, and the very low-carbohydrate diet resulted in profound alterations in fatty acid composition and reduced inflammation compared to a low-fat diet, as well as reduced arteriosclerosis. So there is a lot of information, and I'll give you some more information in a minute on the omega-3 and the omega-6 fatty acids. Jerome and John are giving lifestyle advice, reducing alcohol and smoking. The importance of smoking as a risk factor for coronary heart disease is beyond doubt. Free radicals in cigarette smoke cause oxidative damage to proteins, DNA and lipids, contributing to the pathobiology of arteriosclerosis, heart disease and cancer. As an exercise to estimate the magnitude of risk reduction, a review of 20 independent studies was undertaken. Cessation of smoking was associated with a substantial reduction in risk of all-cause mortality among patients with CHD, coronary heart disease, of 36%. Both active and passive smoking raise the plasma levels of C-reactive protein, and this causes oxidative damage to vascular endothelium via raised plasma fats. Light to moderate alcohol intake is known to have cardioprotective properties. However, the magnitude of protection depends on other factors and may be confined to some subsets of the population. The cardioprotective effect seems to be larger among middle-aged and elderly adults than young adults. And the levels of alcohol at which the risk of coronary heart disease is lowest and the levels of alcohol of which the risk exceeds the risk among abstainers are lower for women than for men. There's evidence to suggest that wine may have more beneficial effects than beer or distilled spirits, with drinking patterns producing greater risk reduction through steady drinking versus binge drinking. Vigorous exercise program is recommended to be based on physical ability. This is after... they're showing that exercise is really well known to produce optimal benefits. A level of exercise equivalent to jogging 32 kilometres a week at 65 to 80% of peak oxygen consumption resulted in greater improvements than did lower amounts of exercise. So you've got to jog 32 kilometres a week. People who were found to jog 19 kilometres a week had a reduction at 65 to 80%. So if you walk or jog those distances, I'm pretty sure that's really going to help you. So doing a lot of exercise is really important. When we talk about different medicines and what we're using for reducing risk of arteriosclerosis and cholesterol. These guys are saying lipoic acid, so we're talking about alpha lipoic acid here. Lipoic acid can prevent high-fat diet-induced dyslipidemia by modulating lipid metabolism, by increasing beta oxidation and decreasing cholesterol synthesis, and oxidative stress by increasing those of free radical scavenger enzyme gene expression. Allium sativum is a herb they're using here, which is garlic, which is one of our favourites. There was a 12-week randomised single-blind placebo-controlled study on type 2 diabetic patients newly diagnosed with dyslipidemia, given 300 milligrams of garlic twice a day with 1.3% allicin in it. After 12 weeks, the garlic-treated group had significant reduction in total cholesterol. LDL-C, HDL cholesterol was significantly increased. That was saying that they've had a reduction in low-density lipoproteins, but their high-density lipoproteins were increased, and no significant difference on the cholesterol, on the triglyceride levels, but it's showing that low-density lipoprotein was decreased and high-density lipoprotein was increased, which is really good. Garlic significantly reduced serum total cholesterol and LDL cholesterol and moderately raised HDL cholesterol as compared to, there was a placebo, this was a placebo, we already said that's a placebo trial. Sinara scumulus, which is globe artichoke, and they did the leaf extract here. 75 adult volunteers took randomized 1,280 milligrams of standardized artichoke leaf extract or placebo daily for 12 weeks. The total plasma cholesterol decreased by 4.2%. Artichoke leaf extract consumption resulted in a modest but favourable, statistically significant reduction in plasma cholesterol after 12 weeks. Arteriosclerosis and dyslipidemia are chronic conditions that need to be constantly treated. Small changes in blood lipid levels may have significant effects on your health, and consider the effects of comorbidities and cardiovascular health. Blood test monitoring is the only guarantee of assessing treatment outcomes. So this is from the book Clinical Naturopathy, an Evidence-Based Guide to Practice, Jerome Sarris and John Wardle. And they've just given us some really nice little information here about reducing blood cholesterol levels and what their thoughts on it. They've got a couple of case studies in here where they were giving people coenzyme Q10, omega-3 fatty acids, and hawthorn as well. They're talking about promoting liver chloresis, so that's the bile acids, and keeping the liver functioning really well. And they talk about lots of different things, alterating the lipid profiles with natural products. They mention nicotinic acid, polycosanol, which is a phytostanol. And they talk about using cacao butter and essential fatty acids. So that's really nice information that we've got there from those guys to help us. When we look at omega fatty acids and what they're going to do now, I'm just moving across into my into one of my other textbooks that I've got here, which is just super beautiful. It's a pharmacology book, and they're talking about how to lower lipids and what could be a thing that could do it. And the book is called Pharmacology for Health Professionals, and it's by Bronwyn Bryant and Kathleen Knights. And like I said to you, I'm in my herbal dispensary and I'm in my medical library. Lots of these books are books that I've used, in my studies over the years and when I was studying, doing my degree and my master's. So I just want to just read you some information out of these books because it's awesome. So one of the things that we have is plant sterols. Okay, so plant sterols work. Some people take statin drugs, and I don't agree with statin drugs. And if you look in my book, The Wellness Zone, I've been writing since 2005 my aversion to statin drugs. I don't like them, basically, because I don't like things that are going to block the absorption of fatty acids and nutrients. But here in my pharmacology book, they're talking about clinical interest in plant sterols. I'm reading from the book now. There is a substantial interest in the use of plant sterols as a component of dietary management of people with hyperlipidemia. Plant sterols such as cedar sterol are similar in structure to cholesterol, and although minimally absorbed, they compete with cholesterol for incorporation into micelles in the gastrointestinal tract. This results in less absorption of cholesterol. In turn, this stimulates hepatic low-density lipoprotein receptor formation, increasing the uptake of LDL, and so lowering the plasma cholesterol level. Plant sterols have been incorporated into margarine and mayonnaise, which is something that was super popular from the 1980s onwards. But I don't necessarily agree with that either. I think that if you're going to take plant sterols, take them and know that you're taking them. A daily dose of 2 to 3 grams reduces LDL cholesterol by 5 to 10%. But there is evidence that absorption of dietary carotenoids might be impaired. Toxicity appears not to be an issue in the short term, but long-term safety studies have yet to be undertaken. And the source from this was the Heart Foundation of Australia guidelines and publications, heartfoundation.com.au, if you want to check that out further. So as far as I can see, they're saying exactly what I've thought and I've been writing about, because you really want to get the essential fatty acids from the nutrients in the foods that you're eating into your body. And what the plant sterols do is they compete with the fatty acids in the small intestine. And so those little cyclomicrons that are carrying the fatty acids across the body, the fatty acids don't get carried across the body because they get blocked by the plant sterols. But some of the fatty acids that we want to look at is the clinical interest in fish oil. Evidence exists that consumption of omega-3 fatty acids found in fish and fish oil reduces the incidence of ischemic heart disease and sudden death from myocardial infarction, and prolongs the life of myocardial infarction survivors. The consumption of omega-3 fatty acids by humans has decreased as a result of the increased consumption of commercial livestock, which have lower levels of omega-3 fatty acids than their wild and free-range counterparts. One of the active components of fish oil is docosaccharoic acid, DHA, which is present in oily fish such as mackerel, salmon, and tuna. Consumption of a fish-rich diet is thought to account for the lower incidence of coronary heart disease in the Japanese and in Greenland Eskimos. In a recent trial, subjects treated with simvastatin, but with persistent hypertriglyceridemia, were additionally prescribed fish oil, 2 grams twice daily for 1 year. A significant reduction was observed in plasma triglycerides, that's a 20 to 30% reduction, and very low density lipoprotein cholesterol, 30 to 4%. And that was done by Durrington, D-U-R-R-I-N-G-T-O-N, A-L, in 2001. Fish oil can be added to a lipid-lowering drug regime, but a daily dose of at least 2 grams is required. As the content of fatty acids varies among formulations, the dosage of omega-3 fatty acids must be calculated for each individual product. So fish oil, DHA and EPA, essential fatty acids, they're super important in reduction of cholesterol. We always want to be really careful about what fatty acids we have in our diet. And so we want to reduce saturated fatty acids in our diet. I'm back to my work now from the Wellness Zone. This is the second edition, 2008. So eliminate fatty animal products from your diet, such as I've written here, hamburgers, bacon, sausage and processed meats. There's been a lot of research lately into the toxicity of processed meats and increased risk of cancer with processed meats. So that's something that you would want to be looking at. Cut visible fat from meat as much as possible. Read labels carefully and avoid foods that contain hydrogenated vegetable oils, cocoa butter, beef fat, and lard. Be kind to your body and only have these foods, you know, like occasionally, not all the time. I don't necessarily think that you need to have a low-fat diet, but I think you need to have a moderate-fat diet. So it really depends upon what your blood serum cholesterol levels are, and the only way to really do that is to have blood tests. You can get little finger prick cholesterol tests, which you can get at your local pharmacy, or you can buy the kits online and have them at home, and you can really start to measure your own cholesterol levels yourself and see what's happening. If you're going to lose weight, that can help as well, because if you're letting go of the fat in your own body and letting go of the fat in your blood, it really helps you to lose weight. You know, well, it's obvious trans fats are out, you know, so French fries and other foods that are like that, you know, just stay away from them. It's pretty that common sense prevails. But, you know, it's interesting that there's no RDA recommended daily allowance for total fat intake. But just look at the incidence of obesity in our world today and you'll just think that it's a contributory factor of fats, sugars, carbohydrates, eating too much. And I'm just going to mention here too my favourite, intermittent fasting, and why I think intermittent fasting is so good. I fast myself, fasting, you know, one day a week, I'm saying, you know, for 24 hours, one day a week is a really good way to fast, just to give your body an increase in human growth hormone, to get rid of any excess fatty acids in your diet, to get rid of any, you know, like extra fat in your body as well, and to give your liver a really good clean. I really love doing that. If you're going to be just looking at what you can do in your diet, like today, right now, how you can help lower cholesterol. Hot chili helps eliminate cholesterol. Capsicum is known to help break down arteriosclerosis and to help remove it from the body. And it also acts as a stimulant and helps circulation. So taking a capsicum, hot little chili, slicing some up and putting it in your food is really good to have in your diet every day. Globe artichoke, we've already talked about. It's just so known to help increase liver tissue regeneration, increases liver circulation, increases the RNA content in liver cells and stimulates cell division. It adds to cholesterol cutting. It helps eliminate cholesterol from your body faster by acting as a choleretic and increasing the contractive power of bile duct, which improves the flow of bile from the liver to the gallbladder. The mode of action is considered the indirect inhibition of an enzyme as part of cholesterol biosynthesis. We talked about garlic. It reduces serum cholesterol levels and inhibits the oxidation of low-density lipoprotein. Just use fresh raw garlic in your cooking all the time. Make yourself a potion by juicing garlic, which I talk about a lot in my podcasts. Ginkgo biloba is a herb that you hear everything about. It's such a great popular herb. It increases blood circulation and nutrition to the brain. It increases your short-term memory. And because of its flavonoidal actions, ginkgo is a very good general tonic and an excellent antioxidant. An antioxidant is a substance that mops up free radicals in your system and assists in them to flush out harmlessly. Too many free radicals create disharmony and can lead to a gradual deterioration of your body, and this can manifest as aging, cancers, illness, and general low vitality. The combination of ginkgo biloba with hawthorn is now widely used by healthcare practitioners for conditions such as high blood pressure and circulatory problems, And this particular combination is good because it combines the benefits of ginkgo with hawthorn's action in dissolving deposits of thickness in scleretic arteries. It improves circulation to the heart, providing it with rich oxygenated blood, and helps reduce blood pressure. It helps reduce the incidence of stroke and heart attack, and ginkgo and hawthorn work synergistically together with excellent results, which offer a natural remedy as a prevention for cardiovascular disease. So when we're looking at reducing our cholesterol, we're not just looking at reducing it in our blood, we're looking at protecting our whole cardiovascular system. I'm just going to go back in a really old book now, The Nature Doctor by Dr. Vogel. I've got the 50th edition, which was published in 89. So I got this book in 1989, but it was first published in Switzerland in 1952, and it's called The Nature Doctor, and it's a manual of traditional and complementary medicine. And he talks about with arteriosclerosis and cholesterol, seaweed, the benefits derived from a regular intake of seaweed are still a secret which may offer many answers to our questions in the future. It is a custom in Korea, Japan and many Chinese provinces to eat rice served with thin wafers of pressed seaweed. During my stay there, I adopted this habit and I must say it made me feel very well indeed. So if you are concerned about preventing these three illnesses, or if you are already a victim of one or more of them, you should consider the following rules, which are so basic as well as curative. And the three illnesses that he's talking about are arteriosclerosis, coronary thrombosis, and heart attacks. And so he's saying that he's saying here that a diet consisting of brown white rice, soft white cheese, quark, and salads is almost miraculous results if it adhered to consistently. By lowering the blood pressure in a natural way, it becomes unnecessary to take any radical medicines. This simple natural treatment makes it possible to rehabilitate the blood vessels right from the beginning. As I've seen from experience in Asian countries, rice bran positively influences the regeneration of the arteries. Plants as rich in natural iodine, such as seaweed, contribute largely to the prevention and cure of arteriosclerosis. The curative property of these plants of the sea can easily be made available by including them in seasoning, salts or foods. Other medicinal herbs and spices are also beneficial, such as watercress, horseradish, garlic and leeks. A natural remedy that is to be recommended is raw wolfavia, a combination of raw wolfia and oats, R-A-U-W-O-L-F-I-A, and oats. Further excellent remedies for the blood vessels and arteriosclerosis are arterioforce capsules, which is something that he made, consisting of mistletoe, garlic, hawthorn and passion flower. He recommends also ginkgo biloba. Plenty of oxygen is necessary, and this means taking long walks through the woods and forests, hills and mountains, or by the seaside, always deeply inhaling the fresh air. But a word of caution is necessary for those who already suffer from arteriosclerosis. Such people should avoid higher altitudes because the thin air could lead to a stroke. If you spend most of your time sitting in an office, the above advice and simple remedy is especially recommended. If you do not wish to be a doddery old man who shuffles along and has to be led to his office, you should give careful consideration to how you spend your time away from it. Make sure you don't spend your free time with friends in the bar instead of the outdoors. How to avoid possible harm. Remember, this is 1952, and I'm reading from the Nature Doctor, Dr. H.C. Vogel, a manual of traditional and complementary medicines. One does not have to be a fanatic in order to admit that modern civilized man is living somewhat dangerously. Just think of all the conveniences we have gained from technology in our in our age of motor vehicles and mechanisation. They bring with them less activity outdoors and cause pollution of the air. Our indulgence in refined food products does not exactly contribute to good health either. The arteries degenerate as a result of the drawbacks of our lifestyle. Symptoms of old age appear much too early, decreasing our efficiency and productivity, and sometimes bringing an early end to our lives. The average increase of our lifespan due to a reduction of infant mortality does not change this picture either. It is not a question of reaching an advanced age by artificial means, by the use of drugs and special therapies, while our body is ailing and vegetating. Rather, it is much better to live to a ripe old age and still be in good health. Our lifestyle and what we eat should be governed by the laws of nature and not by the dictates of society, which have gone awry and at best contribute very little to our physical well-being. While I was spending some time in the Far East, I paid special attention to the occurrence of the above illnesses: arteriosclerosis, coronary thrombitis, and heart attacks. It was quite evident that among the people living in the countryside of Japan, Korea, and the Philippines, heart-related diseases are seldom heard of. If they do occur, it is usually among the better off who have a higher standard of living. In these Far Eastern countries, people usually eat very little fat, generally not more than 50 grams, a little less than 2 ounces of fat and oil a day. And let me add that these 50 grams consists of mainly homemade fats with a high content of unsaturated fatty acids. Equally significant in terms of their healthy diet is their habit of eating rice to meet the need for carbohydrates. This is a custom worth copying, since rice has the quality of keeping the arteries young for a long time. Among these people whose staple diet consists of rice, I have noticed that the blood vessels, particularly the arteries, are in a much better condition than those who have a different diet. And another thing, the benefits derived from seaweed are still a secret, which offer many answers to our questions in the future. So his advice here, this is Dr. Vogel. 1, it is above all essential to reduce the consumption of protein and fats. If possible, avoid animal fats altogether and use natural, unrefined oils such as sunflower, safflower, poppy seed, or corn oil instead. We're talking natural oils here. Make brown rice the basis of your diet. Raw vegetables and soft white cheese, quark, should supplement the rice diet. Be sure to eat fresh salads every day, preferably dressed with molkosan, whey concentrate, and unrefined oils. 4, their curative properties, including your diet wheat germ oil and wheat germ oil capsules, as well as any foods that contain seaweed. However, keep off kelp if your blood pressure is high. Instead of other favourite cheeses, eat only mild, white, soft quark or cottage cheese. If it is difficult to give up the old habit of eating meat, eat very little of it and infrequently. The same advice holds true for eggs, which should never be eaten hard-boiled. I'm not sure of his logic to this exactly, but this is just reading from Vogel's work. For season, use salt very sparingly. Change to sea salt. It is of utmost importance to provide the body with plenty of oxygen, so take long country walks at a good pace to stimulate deep breathing. If it is not possible to do this on a daily basis, at least use the weekend for that purpose. Instead of spending time in one's favourite cafe, bar or restaurant, sitting in front of a television or behind the wheel of a car, get out and exercise your legs in the countryside. If you try to be conscientious in living according to these 7 rules, you will definitely increase your lifespan and help yourself to avoid many health problems in your advanced years. For example, hardening of the arteries will not incapacitate you, neither will coronary thrombosis, and you will have no need to fear a sudden end through a heart attack. It is simple to obey nature, and doing so will reward us in turn with good health and a long life. C. So this is really beautiful information using Nature Cure. Dr. Vogel was a Nature Cure practitioner from Switzerland. And as you know, Nature Cure is my philosophy this spring for our detox. And I hope you've enjoyed the information that I've given you today on reducing your cholesterol. It's something that we want to look at during our detox season. My name's Dominique Liv-Kamel, and you're listening to Project Wellness. You can find us on Spotify and also on Podbean. So our website is medicineroom.com.au, and we're here to help you. Blessings, light, and love. I hope you have an awesome day.